You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast series 4 episode 24 tonight. It's myself, Kieran Burke. I'm delighted to be joined once again this week by my co-host Gary Riley, and we've got two excellent interviews to bring you on tonight's show. Of course, it is FAI Cup semi-final week and we're going to hear from Dean George of Athlone Town. He got the hat-trick and the quarter-final win over Shelburne, and we're going to hear from a Shamrock Rovers and the League of Ireland legend, Stephen Rice, calling in from the UK. He's of course with Crystal Palace's under-23s these days. So we're going to have a chat with Ricer about how his coaching experience is going at the moment, and we'll have a chat about Rovers, Longford and much, much more as well. But once again this week, Gary, how are you keeping?
Not too bad at all, Kieran. Very content after this week. You know, we got to calm down after the playoff win, so it's nice just to enjoy it now.
Yeah, I suppose I better just say a big thanks to everyone that tuned in last week. It was very, very popular, even among our non-Longford listeners. I think everyone could sense the enjoyment and the optimism and everything from behind the microphone. So I'm glad that came across and you enjoyed it, and we had a bit of a laugh. But it's back to business this week, and we'll start by looking back at those quarterfinal games. Gary, we'll start with the game at Dalymount Park. It was live on RT. Bowes 1, Dundalk 4. I thought there was some really, really good football played in this one, particularly in the first half.
Yeah, there was. Last week, you would have heard me saying that I thought Bowes would have went through. They were looking to, put a cap on a nice season that they had. Even with COVID and all of that, they did well, and probably do a job on Dundalk. But that wasn't the case. I think a lot of people are saying that it was Dundalk's best performance of the season. Probably was. Some good goals and some really nice play. But they were really solid as well. So fair play to them. They did. Dundalk did a great job, and now they can look forward to a semi-final.
Yeah, I thought Dundalk, I have to agree with that. I thought they were absolutely excellent. Best football they've played this season. Best football they've played under Filippo Giovanoli. The goals from Michael Duffy, a couple from McMillan, and a goal from Odua at the end. Andre Wright with the goal for Bowes from the penalty spot. Mm-hmm. Look, I suppose, Gary, we'll go back to our thoughts on this game last week. Neither of us gave Dundalk much of a chance. I know you said you expected Dundalk to certainly put up a fight, but you fancied Bowes to go through. I was very confident on Bowes myself. And Gary, you know you're getting good at this podcast crack when you're getting some fan mail. I have a message in for yourself from a listener last week.
Oh, lovely.
That useless see you next Tuesday of a co-presenter. Bowes to qualify my body part. club burning down won't even give Bowes a game. Prick. Gary, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, geez, that's a really concise, well thought out response to what I was saying last week.
It goes against what you were saying last week, because
saying for a few weeks actually is right.
Yeah, you've very much been of the opinion that there's too much concern about Dundalk, the out of contract players, the management situation. You think that they're in a perfectly good position. Not only that most fans would be very, very happy to be in the position Dundalk are in.
Yeah, well, look, comparing other clubs to Dundalk probably isn't the best way to go when, you know, Dundalk have had such great success over the last few years. You would want to compare yourself to them, but at the same time, Dundalk will also see some of the problems that any League of Ireland club is going to be having, players out of contract, all of that stuff. But as I was saying last week, that's, you go and give them the money or don't give them the money or whatever. If they want to stay and you're going to give them a few pound, then that's what you do. The burning building stuff, I had to laugh at, because that's how I'm reading all the Dundalk fans and how they're portraying the club. It's not in that state. It really isn't. I know there's, you know, changes going around in the background and chairman and directors of football and all of this stuff and an unknown manager. But at the end of the day, they're in a FAI Cup semi-final. Yes, they didn't have a fantastic season, but they also changed manager. That's the end of the association with Stephen Kenny and all the success he brought. So now it's a new management team a new management team of the club as well as that. So of course changes are going to happen. It's not all going to be just plain sailing forever and ever. But look, I really thought that Dundalk, based on their performances, and I'd be surprised if too many Dundalk fans would disagree with me, their performances haven't been fantastic. But that's what's going to happen when you make changes like that at a club and at a first team level. So
yeah, and I think you made the good point there as well. Like, players are out of contract. You either give them what they want and keep them, or you don't. They've got a clean slate to work with at the same time now.
Yeah, and like, if, as I've maintained for quite a while that Filippo deserves a shout next year. Got them into Europe. Got them into an FAI Cup semi-final. Their league form wasn't great. But can't attribute that all of that to Filippo either. So he certainly deserves a good go next season.
Just to cut across, yeah, I have to say I was very optimistic after this game, because I was really, really impressed with the football Dundalk played. I thought it was vintage Dundalk stuff, some of the stuff that we've seen under Kenny and under Vinnie Perth. But then we see what happens last night. Again, a game in Europe where they're not outclassed by any means, but they just make some awful individual errors. Now, you can't really blame the manager for that, but there was a lot of tinkering with the system and with personnel before and during the game. They changed shape 3 or 4 times during the game last night. I'm looking at Gannon there. He's out on the right wing. He's all over the place. He's in the centre of the park at times. And then eventually he goes into right back. And surprise, surprise, he plays his best football at right back. Like, he's the best right back in the country. It's not surprising he plays his best football there. So there was a lot of things that concerned me again last night. So I don't really know where I am personally on the whole Filippo situation, whether he deserves a shot or not. But look, we've talked about Dundalk quite a bit in the last while, so we'll not stick on them for too much longer. But again, I think what you've been saying over the last couple of weeks is they're not in a bad situation at all. Most fans would bite your hand off to be in Dundalk's place right now.
Yeah, completely. They're not in the burning building type of position that a lot of Dundalk fans are letting on. I just don't see it. Yep, changes are happening, but you know, there's a lot of players that are towards the autumn or winter their careers now at Dundalk, so they need to be shipped on. Like, you know, we said last week Brian Gartland isn't going to live forever at 29 years of age, or whatever age he is now, 30. So you're going to have to get new players in, find the next Brian Gartland, find the next whoever, Chris Shields, Stephen O'Donnell, all the rest of the boys. You're just going to have to get, you know, it's a cycle, it's a constant process. So Dundalk fans, I think I need a bit of realism needs to be applied here, and support the manager, support the club, and try and be positive about the next season.
Yeah, Europa League football, more than likely a place in the FAI Cup final and a third place finish in the league. Not bad at all, in my opinion.
Not too bad at all.
A quick word on Bowes, Gary. They were outclassed in this game at times, and it's just, I suppose it's a bit of a damp way to end their season, because they had such a great year, runners up in the league, and we thought that they might at least get to a cup final, pick up a bit of silverware maybe. Does this show how difficult it's going to be for Keith Long to bridge that gap? Because Dundalk and Rovers, they've got so much resources behind them, and on top of that, they're absolutely excellent football teams. Let's not take that away from them, but it's going to be very difficult for Bowes to move to that next level now, isn't it?
It really is, and you're looking at some of the players there. I know Bowes made an announcement this week. They've signed a lot of key players to another year at Dalymount. So fair play to them. Like, they are trying to keep a core group of players. At the same time, though, looking down through, like, when players made their debuts, a lot of players in the last couple of years have made their debuts, and they were a lot of the re-signings that were made. So it may take a bit of time for the current crop of players that, you know, can they improve? They certainly can, and playing together a bit more often and with maybe a bit more regularity than there was this year, they could even be a bit closer to Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk next year. But look, they did they had a great season. They will of course be disappointed with the way it has ended. You know, there was a lot of positivity around Bowes. My friend Colin was talking about how excited he was for the FAI Cup final, just to even progress in it, and even the chance of playing Rovers in the final was a huge attraction to a lot of fans. So, look, to be very disappointed, and you're dead right, it is a damp way to end the season. But, you know, there's a lot of positivities to take from it. The one thing I'd be looking at, both now in the offseason, who can they add to that squad? Yeah. How can they improve? You know, there was talk there, Danny Grant wasn't part of the re-signings in that little announcement that they made the other day. So, you know, is he going somewhere else? Is he, you know, moving down to Shamrock Rovers? Who knows?
I think Danny Mandrew as well is one that's a lot of talk about too, isn't there?
Well, and rightly so. When was the last time he played a game for Bowes? It's been a while. So, like, look, there's a lot of things, you know, and they'd be, what's it, the talismans, but there'd be big players in the team, and you just don't want them players to be just walking out the door either. So it's going to be a challenge for both for the next couple of years to keep, you know, the better players in the squad and improve on it each year. So they've started right. They got Trevor and Keith in there now for the next 4 years. So that's a great basis to go on. So I think Bowes and their fans should look forward to next season.
Now, moving on to our next game. It was over a week ago, but the controversy continues to rumble on. A 5-goal thriller at Ballybuffet. Finn Harps 2, Shamrock Rovers 3. We got this one. We didn't get it wrong in the end, but we were fairly close to getting it wrong. We didn't give Harps much of a chance in our pre-match preview of this game. But Harps were 2-0 up thanks to goals from Barry McNamee and Folan. But Shamrock Rovers with 3 penalties. 2 of them scored, 1 missed, and Graham Burke with the winner. Talk us through this one, Gary. A crazy game of football.
It really was, and even from the get go, it was just awful trying to watch it. It was like looking through, I don't know, it was like looking through a shower trying to watch that game. The conditions weren't great, and to be fair, the Watch League of Ireland team managed to get a bit of a rag on that camera, so we were able to watch most of it. It was a great start for Harps. Yeah, dead right. I had written them off. Same way as you. Thought the attraction and the importance after Shamrock Rovers having such a good season and going unbeaten that they'd want to do well in the FAI Cup too. So it was a great start for Harps. They played well, they were solid, and going to halftime at 2-0 was a great boost for them. So they'll be very disappointed. They'll be disappointed a bit with the refereeing decisions that were made. I'm not sure some of the fanfare after the game and some of the stuff on social media, which was quite funny, to be fair to them. Warranted.
Let's break down the decisions one by one. So the first one, unfortunately, the cameraman doesn't exactly catch it in full. All you really see is a heap of players on the floor. So it's hard to make a judgment on that one. Go on.
I thought that one was quite harsh. I didn't really think there was much in that. Was it scales that went down? I think it was scales in the box.
Again, I initially thought it was probably quite harsh, but again, we didn't really get the best view of it. Moving on to the second one, wasn't the McGinley incident.
The second one was immediately after the first. The old Mealy in the box, and it was handball. I think handball. So. I can't remember who crossed it in. But it was handball. I thought it was handball on first view, and I didn't need and put a carbon copy replay of what I seen the first time. But I thought it was handball. And then for the third one, Burke, I don't want to say he dived. It looks like he manufactured a good bit of the contact with McGinley. He kind of knocked it by McGinley and left a leg out or put a boot into McGinley to make himself go down. But I think, you know, that's probably been actually very fair on Graham Burke.
Yeah.
He did give the opportunity, though. Him flying out of that feet first.
Yeah.
Graham Burke, and he just popped Graham Burke.
Yeah, I've had a look at that one again today. Again, the camera's the wrong side, but you can actually see that Burke takes a step after he makes contact with the ball and goes around McGinley. He takes one step and then he goes down. So for me, I think he's definitely manufactured if there was any contact at all. Personally, I didn't think it was a penalty. I think the thing that if I was a Harps fan that would really anger me, the handball that's given, down at the other end, Ronan Finn clearly handles one.
That was shocking. For me,
that was the worst decision of the match. You can look at the other ones and break them down and have your own. But for me, the handball, that was clear as day.
That was insane. And I saw a very good still that I assume a Harps fan put up. The referee is looking straight at it. He has as clear as it was up in Harps that night, but as clear as humanly possible. I thought Ronan Finn caught it for a minute. It was a blatant handball decision that just simply wasn't given. And between the linesman looking across the line, the referee, maybe 10, 15 yards away from it, can't see that handball. It is a disgrace. But that shouldn't be thought of in the context as what happened on the other end of the pitch. It is a handball. That's what it is. It's not like, I gave Shamrock Rovers 3 penalties and now it's my turn to give you one. That's not the case. It was a handball in itself. That's what it is. And the ref should have given it. And I can't even dream up a reason as to why he didn't give it. I thought it was a very poor decision.
Yeah, Rob Hennessy was the man in the middle. And I see there's a lot of anger on social media today, as there always is on social media these days. But he's been awarded the semi-final game between Athlone and Dundalk live on RT on Sunday. And a lot of people feel after that performance that he shouldn't be anywhere near a semi-final. I suppose that's something myself and John Breyer in years gone by on this podcast have discussed. There's these assessors at every game. And you often see this where referees have dreadful performances and they're out again the next week. And, if a player has a bad game, he's dropped. If a manager's not doing his thing, he's sacked. Why is it not the same with referees in this country? Is it down to the fact that maybe there's a shortage of referees? That's something I've pointed out in the past. As somebody that did a bit of refereeing in the past, I felt that the system just wasn't right. I don't think there's enough referees been developed around the country. I think it's, again, something that's probably very Dublin central. I don't think there's enough been done to try and get young people and former players and that involved in refereeing. And when they're in it, I don't think there's enough been done to protect them. I could do a full podcast on some of the scary experiences I had of having to be escorted off pitches. And these are kids' games, and it's never the players. It's not the players that are the issue. It's the absolute clowns on the sideline that call themselves parents. You wouldn't believe some of the stories I could tell you, but.
I'm sure you made some shocking decisions, Karen.
I'm sure you probably did
deserve a clip around the head.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not sure a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old, whatever age I was at the time, whether he deserves to be told he's going to get his jaw shattered and the likes of that. I just don't think there's enough been done to develop referees. I don't think there's been enough done to protect them. Of course, we've seen some absolute horror stories come out in the last year or two about referees being assaulted up and down the country, and it's something that concerns me going forward, whether there's going to be a real lack of referees in this country down the line.
Yeah, I've looked into it before myself. I just find it, even to not be a referee later on, it'd be just interesting to see some of the education pieces around it. I know the FEI are whole classes and stuff like that to get you started with your qualifications to be a ref. But
well, I can tell you, I did those courses, obviously, because you have to do the beginner's course. And you were told at the time, someone will be around in 6 months wherever you're reffing, check you out, see how you're doing.
You believe that, did you?
Give you some advice, and if you're doing well, you'll get moved up and blah, blah, blah. I was let off away on my own, 16 years of age, never heard from no one at the FAI again. I was real interested in doing refresher courses and trying to go up to that next level. Obviously, at that age, I wasn't driving, so I was limited in the games I could referee, but I felt I was progressing quite well, and I just didn't feel there was a clear pathway for me there. Whereas I've spoken to people that have done their refereeing through the IFA, and they're in levels, like they can say, I'm level 3, I need to do this to get to level 4. I never felt that was there when I was refereeing. Maybe it's changed since, but I don't know. At the time, it certainly wasn't. I didn't see a clear pathway as a referee.
Yeah, but that's, look, there's no point in us harping on about the FEI and actually developing football in this country. We're probably 20 years behind where we ought to be.
Well, you'll hear it later on in the interview with Stephen Rice. We were discussing that's probably one thing the FEI have done right in the last few years is the coaching side of things, because there is now, look, it's a very expensive thing to get into. Some people are lucky their clubs pay for it or help them towards it. But I know, again, in college, I did some of the early courses, but I mean, you're talking, I think it's 6,000 euro or something for the pro license. Now, look, if you're going for a pro license,
I think it's more than that, actually, would you believe?
Yeah, you're probably doing okay at that. You're probably with a club and they might pay towards it, as I said. But for someone that is trying, and I know I've spoken to people that have put themselves into debt trying to do these courses, and the problem is there's such a lack of jobs that actually pay coaching jobs in this country. Mm. You're putting all this money into trying to get this badge for this and that, and there's no reward unless you can get yourself a job at maybe a League of Ireland club and that. So, but at the same time, there is a pathway there. Whether you have the finances and the resources to get up that pathway is a different thing. But there's a vision in place, where when I was a referee, I didn't have that vision.
Yeah, but you see, when from an FAI perspective, they were intending to, well, I'd say at some point in the top process, it was, we need to produce referees for the League of Ireland. And then once that was the answer, or that the League of Ireland was the answer, then, oh, well, who cares then? Do the bare minimum, do what we need to do by UEFA standards, let's say, have some form of program going, offer it twice a year, whatever.
Mm. I know we're gone off on a tangent here, totally from the Harps Rovers game, but...
We all have rubbish from referees in League of Ireland, and yeah. You know, this has been going on since God was a gossin. Like, it's not going to change until the FAI actually instigate that.
Yeah,
change.
Because what I wanted to come in on what you were saying there about producing referees for League of Ireland, I used to go to an awful lot when I was living down in Longford. I went to an awful lot of the under 15, 17, 19s games, and at a lot of those games, it was local referees doing it. Now, these are fellas that are well into their 40s, 50s, and so on, and you know, they're just doing that on the Sunday league basis. So they're obviously not in the physical condition, with all due respect, of a League of Ireland or of a professional referee. And some of the decisions were absolutely shocking, because these are young fellas that are quite good at football at that age, you know, 17, 19 year old trying to break into football. The game is played at a fast speed. There's a lot of physical stuff going on. The referee would be 50 or 60 yards away, and he'd probably stay in that little spot for the whole game because he wouldn't be able to keep up. But my point was, why is there not young referees? Why am I not seeing young referees out of these games? Why is the underage leagues not been used not only to produce players, but to produce officials? Instead, it was fellas picking up a handy few pound from the local Sunday league. Couldn't give two hoots about their performance. It was a handy few pound. And, you know, that was damaging the performances of the players, because there was some awful decisions been made.
Oh, yeah. I'd say that few pound paid for a few pints from the night before. Like, that's been the way, like, since I was playing under six football, like, and I don't know if you could even call it that back in the day. You know, it was the same yarn the whole way through. Old fellas, you know, didn't seem to be any, like, older young adults, so, like, we'll say lads in their late teens, early 20s, that had an interest in doing refereeing and wanted to actually get involved in a proper way. So even in the Longford District Schoolboy League and stuff like that, it was always nearly the same old refs the whole time, all old fellas. Like, okay, the FAI certainly needs to be given a serious amount of attention. But this has been a complaint for so long. Blue in the face looking at ridiculous refereeing decisions, and nothing seems to be changing. You know, particularly, I know, like, when you're looking at the pictures and the officials list have been released each week, you're there, oh God, not this clown again, not this fellow, oh Jesus. You know, you're just lamenting the whole time. You see this fellow, oh Jesus, last week he did this up in some place, or he reffed us last week as well. You know, even on a very small note, refs refereeing two clubs in a row. Or sorry, the same club, two games in a row.
Yeah, and that's something I've noticed a lot this season in the first division in particular.
Oh yeah, sure. I'm surprised some of the rest didn't move down to Longford for the sake of it. Like, it's just a bit tiring. But look, if we'd be all day talking, whinging about, when we're not whinging, I think it's a legitimate complaint. But we could be all day talking about the quality of refs in the League of Ireland. But in this particular game, it probably would have been a very hard decision to correct for the Graham Burke. McGinley incident.
Yeah,
he's flying out like that.
Mm, what I was going to say, the referee again in that situation, just like the Finn incident, he should receive more help from his linesman there.
Yeah, he should, but you know, the linesman probably couldn't see. Yeah. He had muck in his face or some other rubbish that was going on. But that's just the type of it. It's like, you know, when either the linesman or the referee has a clue who hit the ball last, it's like the head nodding and the bobbing and the winking to each other, and you know, the arms, you know, it's all these silent, you know, it's like a hoolie in the sun out in the pitch half the time. So, you know, you can't expect too much from them, because they've been allowed to be like this for so long. You know, Rob Hennessy, he didn't have a great game there, but that was probably one of an endless number of bad games that he had. And now, as you said, he's doing an FAI Cup semi-final next week. So, what do you expect?
Yeah, I suppose just to round off on the game itself, Gary, Harps very, very unfortunate, but look, the main objective for them this season was to stay in the Premier Division. They've done that. They got to the quarterfinals of the Cup. I think they can be happy with themselves. Rovers, it's a big, big let-off for them. They're going to have to up their game in the next one against Sligo, and we'll move on to chat about Sligo and Derry now. It was an awful game of football, this one. I was looking forward to sitting down and watching this on a Wednesday, even though there was Champions League football on. It's never in question for me. I always put the League of Ireland on, and I was looking forward to this game, and unfortunately, I wasn't rewarded. It was a really drab, dull affair. I thought in the 90 minutes, Derry were the better side. In the extra time, Sligo were definitely the better side, so maybe it was only right it was decided by penalties, and we've seen some absolutely horrendous efforts here in this shootout, didn't we?
Oh, what a forgettable game of football. I know, you know, we talk about that, you know, some woeful games this season, but that really, that's up there. Nothing that I can remember much about the game. Penalties were horrific. You know, even Junior's penalty there, walking up to it as if he owned the place.
Well, it's something we're seeing. I think a lot of these are trying to replicate the Bruno Fernandes run up, aren't they? This little dance. You see Ronan Coughlin do it. Now Coughlin seems to have a bit more success with it, but Junior as well was trying to do a bit like Odua last night for Dundalk, trying to sit the keeper down first and then just chip it in nonchalantly. It looks great when it works, but when it doesn't work, I would not like to be in the dressing room. If that had been a penalty that put Sligo out, I wouldn't have liked to have been in that dressing room with Liam Buckley afterwards.
No, certainly not. But these players, you know, I'm not saying that they're crazy, but maybe have a bit of cop on as to where you are. This is the League of Ireland, like, do you know what I mean? This isn't Old Trafford or any of them other places. Do it right. I don't know why this thing has kind of seeped in. I've seen a couple of them like that. Junior penalty was woeful. That I do a penalty, I'd say before the foul was even given, he didn't look like scoring it. Never mind when he stepped up to actually take it. Another rubbish penalty, and as you said, trying to sit the keeper down. Just, you know, I don't want to compare them to anyone. Jamie Vardy is a brilliant striker, a very reliable striker. He probably never looked at the keeper when taking a penalty.
Yeah, he just takes the leather off.
Yeah, horses it in by him and then forget about him, because he isn't going to get it, and that's just a fact. If he gets it where he wants to put it, then sit you down, sit you up, you know, whatever you want to do, keeper, you're not getting near it. So I think that's a more achievable skill rather than trying to give everybody the eyes and being cuter than you actually are. Look, it won't really matter a jot to Sligo. No. It was a forgettable game. As I said, rubbish penalties. Look, from a Derry perspective, I don't think I've been very kind on them this season, but rightly so. I think we talked about Bo's bowing out there as well. Derry just have had a real, real poor season.
Just on their performance in this game, as I said, I thought they were the better side in the 90 minutes. Yeah. I thought they played some good football. It should be remembered they didn't train for, I think it was 28 days or 23 days before this game because of quarantine issues. So you can probably see why they dropped off so much in the extra time. So I think they deserve some amount of credit for how they played in the 90 minutes. They didn't create an awful lot of chances, but they played some nice stuff. And, you know, I'm sick of saying it every week here on the show, but there is players I look at in that team, the likes of Hammond, the likes of Akintunde. I'm looking at them for next year. It's been big players for Derry. They've had a few games now in the league and they're slowly settling in. I'd expect them to be big players for Derry City next year, and I'll be expecting an awful lot more for them. And I would believe that Declan Devine is the right man to lead Derry next year. So I'll be interested to see what they can do.
Yeah, I think he's the right man, but only just about, to be quite honest. You know, I appreciate that. James made the good point a few weeks ago. They've been, you know, significantly more impacted by COVID, being in the north and stuff like that. So that's taken into account as well. But some of their performances throughout the season have been absolute slurry. So I still think Declan Devine is the right man, but a few bad results into next season and he could be under a serious amount of pressure.
Yeah, there's a lot of Longfordisms from you tonight. We've had horse it into the net, slurry, a hooly in the sun. I hope our listeners from outside of the Midlands can keep up with us.
Well, look, Longford has been on my brain a good bit in the last couple of weeks, so you can forgive me.
I'll have to put up some type of translations on our Facebook and Twitter page, maybe. But we'll be expecting a lot more from Derry next year. And from a Sligo point of view, Sligo will have to up their performance big, big time against Shamrock Rovers. We're going to hear from our first guest of the night now. As I said about 2 weeks ago here, we had a Rovers fan onto us that we haven't spoken about enough about Shamrock Rovers. So we actually had two Rovers guests lined up tonight. We were going to hear from Gary Parsons from the Tale of the East Stands podcast, but unfortunately work commitments caught up with him and he wasn't able to join us. But we've got a very, very good replacement indeed. None other than former Shamrock Rovers player Stephen Rice, and he joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast to talk about his coaching career in the UK with Crystal Palace and about his time at Shamrock Rovers and, of course, with Longford Town as well. Now, I know a lot of you on social media have been looking forward to this. We only announced it a couple of hours ago. He's been very, very good to take the call on such short notice. But I'm delighted to say Stephen Rice joins us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast now, all the way from England. Stephen, how are you keeping?
Hey, Kieran, how are you? All good this end? All good with yourself?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic, Stephen. And personally, yourself, you're absolutely flying it. For those that mightn't be aware, you're coaching at Crystal Palace these days.
Yeah, I'm coach with the under-23s at a reserve team here at Crystal Palace. Moved over here since the 4th of September. So it's been a fantastic move so far. Been in a full-time environment, full-time set, full-time coaching, working with top people, Paddy McCarthy, Sean Derry, and obviously walking around a lot of top players and obviously the manager and stuff, and being around these people at a Premier League level is where you aspire to be.
Yeah, you only retired in 2016, I think I'm right in saying, Stephen, and obviously you were coaching then at Shamrock Rovers at the underage setup, and while it is under-23 level you're working at the moment, it's quite a meteoric rise in a short time. So maybe tell us a little bit about your coaching journey so far.
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, my coaching journey started probably when I was 20, 21. I would have completed my UCERT and my B licence by the time I was 23, 24. So very early coaching was in me, and I was always coaching at local clubs and working at different clubs while I was playing, both at Bowes at Shamrock Rovers. And I suppose I took the DDSL Kennedy Cup squad probably in, I think it was 2013 or 2014, and that was my first real time that I'd taken a team alone by myself to be able to begin to implement my own ideas and my own, I suppose, style and a style of play and style of coaching. And I suppose I just got the book for it very, very quickly. I just really excelled then in terms of the coaching courses, went through my A licence, my Elite Youth A licence, my Pro licence since then. Had a couple of years with the DDSL, working with the top players there. You know, you've got the likes of Nathan Collins, Jason Knight, Troy Parra, who were lucky enough to work with these boys in the early stages of the development. And then to move to Shamrock Rovers for 2 years with their 17s and 1 year with the 19s gave me a great platform to understand, I suppose, my own ideas on the game, how we can put the game across, how we see the game to be played, and how we can develop young players. So it was a great learning tool for me, all those years of working as a head coach. And look, you know, you get to a point where you either look to step into a force team within Ireland or in the League of Ireland, or you make a jump to really come outside your comfort zone, and that's what I've done. You know, I've left my family and my partner, and I've come over here to pursue what my passion is, what I love, which is coaching in a full-time setting. So all that work that I've done has got me to this place, but there's still a lot more to do in my development.
Yeah, and just on the move to Crystal Palace, how did that come about? Is it as simple, Stephen, as looking to see what jobs are going and applying and going over and having a chat and that was it?
I suppose the initial, I met Paddy McCarthy on the pro license a couple of years ago, and he's the 18s manager here, Paddy, and obviously we developed a very good relationship, and I suppose a job came up, and I applied for it. Paddy said, look, it'd be good, I think it'd be good fit, and you know, so I applied for the job, and I came over in August there and done an interview. So it was a practical interview on the pitch, delivering a certain topic to the 23s group, and then obviously a formal interview as well as a practical interview. Yeah, and look, there was a huge amount of people in for it, and some very high caliber people. So to be offered it was an honour, to be honest, and it was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down, because it is the highest level that you can work at the Premier League, and I was just excited, and believe me, yeah, I'd applied for plenty of other jobs before that, so persistence was key with it as well.
Yeah, and as you said, you're not long over there, so I suppose when the whole COVID situation came along, how difficult did that make things for yourself personally?
Yeah, it's difficult. Look, as I said, I've taken a huge step in my life, and my family and my partner's made a huge sacrifice for me to come here to pursue what I want to do as a coach. And with COVID in these times, I moved on September the 4th. It was really challenging, and look, it still is, because obviously with quarantine and stuff, people can't get over to you as much as you would like, and I can't get home as much as I would like because of the quarantine, and even working with the players over here, you know, obviously we can't have the likes of team meetings, and we're still, whilst our players can still walk on the pitch, you know, team meetings are still over Zoom, pre-training, post-training meetings are on Zoom, and you know, there is still many challenges around it, but personally, look, it was a challenge. I was lucky enough that Paddy McCarthy, you know, has been absolutely phenomenal, you know, in helping me settle in. I lived with Paddy for a number of weeks while I was getting settled in, and his family. And now I said I've got my own place in London here and stuff, so really settled in. But look, the challenges of COVID are there for everybody, but I'm on the pitch every day, working with players, doing what I love. So, you know, those challenges fade into the background a bit when you're absolutely in love with what you do.
I suppose you're probably one of those players, Stephen, that when people looked at you coming towards the end of your career, they perhaps weren't surprised to see you maybe having an eye on coaching, because you were a captain of many sides, of many great sides, and you were that commanding midfielder, that real vocal presence in the midfield. But I wasn't aware actually that you had already turned your eye to coaching at such a young age, in your early 20s and mid-20s. Do you think that's important for young players in the league at the moment, just to even give it a go and see, go and do a couple of courses, see if they like it, and maybe they get bitten by the bug, and then at least they've started early?
Yeah, and I think, look, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think gone are the days, Ciarán, where, you know, players in the league get to 25 or 23 or 34 and just go, oh, my mate's managing at X club, so I'll go in as assistant manager, you know, with no qualifications, but you end up in a role. I think for players, and I'm speaking to our players here during the week about it, about getting our young boys on the level one over here, or the equivalent of the youth cert or the C license at home. To do your courses at a young age educates you on the game. And the more educated you become on the game while you play, you become a better player. And I found that doing my coach education courses while I was still playing was usually beneficial for me as a player that was still in the game, because I started to see the game in a different way. I started to learn things about the game that I hadn't learned previously as a player, because, you know, as a player, you're very about you. You've got to focus on your performance, and even coaching, you know, at certain stages in the league, depending on where you are, wouldn't be of the highest level either. So when you go into the coach education courses while still playing, you see the game differently, and it helps you as a player. And then the transferable skills for young lads in the league at the moment, whether it be having an A license or B license, being able to communicate effectively with people, whether you're going for another job, there's so many benefits to it. And the lads in the FAI Coach Ed have done a great job there, and there's a lot of good opportunities. So definitely it will be something that I'd say, it's not going to be for everyone, but certainly dip your hand in. It might be under eights, under nines, that might be your forte where you love working with. It might be first team level. But I think if you dip yourself in, see how it feels, and you won't lose by doing a course, you'll only gain by educating yourself.
Yeah, and of course the FAI has taken a lot of flack in recent times, but I think the coaching side of things is definitely something they seem to have done right over the last maybe 5 to 10 years, certainly, and there's a lot of great young Irish coaches coming up at the moment. You're working with the under-23s at Crystal Palace. Is there any young Irish players in the setup there at the moment?
Yeah, there's there wouldn't be. We've got Teo, who's a left back in the U17s. He's already represented Colin O'Brien. He's already represented Ireland at U17, and he's the only one at the moment within the professional phase. So there's not too many, but I said Teo at left back is definitely one, and Cian Flanagan is one that has represented Ireland at U19s, and Cian is in the U23s as well. Sorry, I forgot Cian. So there is two boys here that have that Republic have represented the Republic of Ireland. So it's good to have that mix of culture within the club as well.
Yeah, I suppose it's something we're hearing a lot now when people are discussing young players going over to England, that perhaps there's less opportunities than there was maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. Clubs, Premier League clubs, have the resources to look all over the globe, and obviously Brexit now is going to throw another spanner in the works. At Crystal Palace and the group of players you're working with, what is the kind of background of the players? Is there a lot of overseas players there?
No, to be honest, it's very much, obviously, it's very locally driven. Because obviously South London, the area around Crystal Palace, around Beckenham, around these areas, it is really a hotbed for young players, South London, South East London. So, and the club want to really drive that kind of sense of community and that sense of players coming through the academy from a very young age. And there is a sprinkling of players that come in from overseas, and we have a boy from Northern Ireland here as well. So it wouldn't be, I suppose, as diverse as some of the other Premier League clubs in relation to recruitment at U15, U16, U17 level.
I suppose we'll just go touch on some of your former clubs, Stephen. I don't know how much you've seen of Shamrock Rovers this season, but an absolutely incredible campaign for them, unbeaten in the league, and they could win the double yet as well.
Yeah, I expect them, to be honest. I think they will. I think they'll win the double. I just don't see any teams going near them at the moment. I haven't seen as much of them as I would have liked, to be honest. But I mean, I think they've been the best team. You know, it's been building for, I think Stephen's there since 2016 now. So this is something that's been building for a period of time. And as I said, I was there for 3 years in terms of 17s, 19s, and a lot of good young players coming through, and lots of good things happening off the pitch at the club. And this has been it's been a long time coming for the club, and I'm delighted for everybody involved and everyone behind the scenes, all the people, all the coaches working at the underage level as well. It's been a massive effort, and obviously the staff and the first team. And there's no question about who was the best team in the country this year. And I think Rovers have blown everyone away, and I think they will win the double.
And another one of your former clubs have been celebrating lately. Longford Town promoted back to the Premier Division for the first time since, obviously, your group of players did it in 2014. And I know you've been watching the games as well. Were you impressed with Longford's performances in those playoff games?
Yeah, I was. I think we were on the way to Bournemouth, and I watched the UCD game. Was a bit of a nerve wracker. it didn't look good. But they showed character, in fairness. The Galway game then was, I think the Galway game was probably the best performance out of them in terms, particularly in the first half, 70 minutes. You know, they were very good, and by far the better team. And then, the playoff final then, they were, descending off happening as well, it helped, but that doesn't take away from the achievement and certainly beating a team like Shelbourne, who are Premier. So I'm delighted for Dara, a couple of texts back and forth, and just congratulating them on that. It's brilliant. It's great to see Longford back, and I really hope that as I said, the people of Longford get behind them next year and really support them.
Yeah, as I said earlier on in the interview, there's some brilliant young Irish coaches coming up at the moment. Even if you look to the League of Ireland, I think over the last couple of years, there's been a bit of a shift. Maybe we had for a number of years, maybe the same managers getting jobs because of their reputation and solid, you know, they've done a solid job elsewhere. But clubs have started to look to younger managers now. You've got Tim Clancy there promoted this year. He's done brilliant at Drogheda. You've got Dara at Longford. Neil Fenn was doing well up to a point with Longford as well. So there's lots of young managers out there at the league that are making a name for themselves. Is the future bright for Ireland in terms of coaches?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely do. You've Gary Cronin there. You've obviously Brad's at Rovers. You know, and there is a lot of young coaches, Kev Doherty's at Drogheda as well. I mean, the list goes on, and I think it comes back to that. What I kind of said at the start about the days are gone now of, you know, just because you play, you jump on and become a coach, and that automatic. So if you look at the list of those lads who are gone now and achieving and doing well in their coaching, you know, they've gone through the coach education system. They've gone through all the pathways. A lot of them have worked at younger levels, younger age levels, you know, employed their trade and learned and gone and educated themselves in different ways. And I think, I really think this year has been a turning of the tide in relation to clubs now starting to look at younger coaches in a different way and not just, well, you know, if you're not, he's a bit young or he's a bit inexperienced. You know, the realism is about the job. You look at Tim at Drogheda, you look at Dara. The only way to get experience is by hiring someone, and you can only get it by getting the job. And the lads and Longford have done it, and Drogheda have done it, and Bray have done it with younger coaches. I think it's definitely something now that should also be looked at, you know, because I think it is the way to go. And that's not to say, look, there's still some magnificent managers who have been around, like, you know, like Keita at Bowes and obviously John Carpy back in, have done incredible things as well. But it is brilliant to see young lads getting a chance.
And look, you're obviously getting an absolutely fantastic experience and opportunity over there in England. But if an opportunity did open up in the League of Ireland, is it something that would interest you?
At this moment, you never say never, Ciarán. But at this moment in time, to be working within the full-time environment at a Premier League club, it's definitely something that I would never rule out. But the right, it would obviously have to be the right opportunity. But I'm just loving what I'm doing now. I'm delighted with the decision I've made to come and commit to this club. It's been 100% the right decision. But look, football's a crazy game. You can never rule that out, and it changes, and things can change and very, very quickly. But at the moment, I'm just loving what I'm doing. I'm learning every day. I'm working with some top players. With Sean Derry as a top manager, I've learned so much. So look, that's probably down the line. But as I said, you just can never say never to anything.
Yeah, and look, before we let you go, obviously Palace are in action tonight against Newcastle in the Premier League. They've had a great start to the season. Roy Hodgson, he's, the, I suppose, the ultimate inexperienced manager. Have you had much conversations with Roy in your time there?
Well, it's difficult because of the COVID bubbles, obviously, within groups, you know. So it's been difficult. Certainly, met him a couple of times for sure. I get to watch the sessions, particularly when Airboys, the 23s move up and stuff. So there's a great education in just being able to watch the sessions. But obviously, it's been a bit more restricted since I've been here because obviously the first team have a COVID bubble. And then we have a 23s bubble, and obviously breaking the bubble and eating in the same canteen is obviously at the moment difficult. So I'm really looking forward to when hopefully we can get to a point where you can, you know, sit down and really pick his brain and ask some questions and really have that, I suppose, that interaction. But I have met him a couple of times, a very, very nice man. I've certainly watched a couple of his sessions, and his energy and passion on the pitch is incredible, and his knowledge as well. So I'm really looking forward to tapping into it further.
Yeah, well, hopefully things are back to normal, as we call it, very soon. And obviously fans going to be allowed back into games in the UK as well. So that'll be great to see. Stephen, it's been absolutely brilliant speaking with you. Thanks very much for talking to us. And it's great to hear things are going so well for yourself.
No problem. Thanks for having me on and enjoying the podcast. So keep up the good work, Ciarán. Well done to everyone there between the lines. Really enjoying it.
Between the stripes. So we'll let you away with that
between the stripes. Sorry, between the lines.
Since you want...
That's That's me coaching head on, still carrying on from today.
Since you won us a title, in 2014, we'll let you away with that one.
No worries. Listen, take care of yourself.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Right, Gary, we'll move on to chat about those FAI Cup semi-finals on Sunday, and we'll start with the battle of the Rovers. It's Shamrock Rovers against Sligo Rovers. As we said a couple of moments ago, Sligo will have to play an awful lot better than they did against Derry. And Rovers probably got off the hook a little bit against Finn Harps. So, interesting tie this one.
Oh, they will, but it's in. If you ask any Harps fans, all Shamrock Rovers need to do is launch a few pounds the right direction, and that game will be sewn up for them as well. But I think Shamrock Rovers got out of jail, no doubt about it. They were much better in the second half against Harps, to be fair. They must have got a good, a nice chat with Bradley at halftime, you'd hope. But this will be a very tight game, I think. Sligo will have to, as you said, will have to play a lot better than they did on Wednesday night there against Derry. It was a nothing performance, I thought. They'll really need to up their game in Tala. So
again,
that
quarter final game, just to go back to it for a second, I know we mentioned Derry's issues going into it, but from a Sligo point of view, look, I know there was no fans there and all that, and it was a damp, cold night, but even just watching the game, it didn't have the feel of a quarter final where it was winner takes all. Like some the playoff games we were at, it was the same situation. There was no fans there, and obviously you're like, oh, this place would be full if it was normal circumstances. But from being in the ground, you could feel the tension in the air, even from the players on the pitch. Just watching the game the other night, as you said, it just felt like a nothing game for some reason. It was a really flat performance from Sligo. This was a golden opportunity for them to get into a semi-final, and they just about took it in the end. But they're going to have to try and motivate themselves a little bit more going up to Tala.
Yeah, they'll need a good booting, I'd say, to get them up for this game. Like, people going about Tala, oh, you know, playing in Tala, it's amazing, or, you know, not don't buy that for a second. It's going to be a very tight game. I mean to say that it's going to be need to be a tight game at the back for Sligo. Rovers have a lot of firepower, and of course they're buying penalties all over the place, so Sligo will have to be on their best behaviour, of course. But I still think Shamrock Rovers will have just too much for them. That this could be a historic year for Shamrock Rovers. Do the double, unbeaten in the league, plough through the FAI Cup. A lot of people have probably put an asterisk on it for them, you know, with COVID and shortened season and stuff like that.
But I think if they win the cup, that asterisk gets a lot smaller because you've gone unbeaten the league and you've gone unbeaten some of the same sides again in the cup.
You've beaten them at every avenue. So
yeah, and got through a round in Europe as well, and gave AC Milan a good game. So I don't think you can question. I don't think for a second you can question the quality of this Shamrock Rovers side. I agree with you. I think they'll have too much for Sligo. So what we'll do? We'll move on to a game that on paper looks an easy equation. It's Athlone Town against Dundalk. You look at Dundalk; they're playing in the Europa League. They've been in this cup final. Are they going for six in a row this time around to reach the cup final? I think, you know, they know what it's about at this stage, whereas at Lone, I think it's their first head cup semi-final since 94 or something like that. So you'd be looking at Dundalk as playing an easy winners here. Can you put forward any other argument for us?
I think Dundalk are going to come through it, no doubt about that. I don't think Athlone will just be the walkovers that many people might think. Athlone, you know, they battered a Shell team that are in disarray.
As we say in the horse racing game, that doesn't carry too much form now. You'd put a line through that one.
You would, absolutely. But we've said it on a couple of occasions from when we played Athlone first, just after lockdown. Or the first lockdown, we could see an actual progression in how they've played coming into the last or the latter end of the season. They have been playing a lot better. That game against Shells, I wouldn't be taking it all away from them. No doubt about that. No one had them next to near that game. So I can't say that they're going to be steamrolled by Dundalk, but I still think Dundalk are going to win comfortably enough. But I think Athlone won't do themselves a complete disservice either.
Yeah, I suppose we'll chat about Dundalk a little bit again here. They're coming into this one off the back of yeah, because we don't talk about Dundalk enough, do we? They're coming into this one off the back of a 3-1 defeat against Vienna. Again, as I said at the start of the show, they weren't outclassed at all, but individual errors definitely cost them on the night. Again, there was a lot of tinkering with the shape, with personnel, and I'd expect that will continue here. I think we'll probably see a lot of rotation. You could see as many as 10 or 11 changes from the Dundalk management team for this one. So does that give Athlone maybe a little more chance if Dundalk are fragmented?
Certainly will, of course. The different players coming into the squad into the first team for Dundalk will certainly put a bit of hope into Athlone's eyes. But they know at the same time that a lot of the players that will be coming in will be hungry for a position, probably fighting for one of the 1,000 contracts that are going on in Dundalk in the off-season. So they'll want to be putting a bit of their mark on the game and show the manager what they can do if that is the case. But I think, you know, somewhere in the minds will be that loss against Rapid Vienna there last night. It was a lot of individual mistakes. I'm not sure if you probably won't agree with me, but I thought Gary Rogers should have done a lot better for the header.
No.
Yeah, well, you know, that's fine. It was just like, while it was a good performance from Dundalk, there were a lot of individual errors, and that is not a key indicator, but it's certainly an indicator of the changes that were made and the structure changes and the tactical changes that were made.
Yeah, well, I think straight away last night, looking at the starting 11, the one question is, where's Brian Gartland? But as you said, Brian Gartland's not a spring chicken, so he can only play so many games. So you can only imagine maybe they felt he was carrying a bit of fatigue into the game, and they've opted to make a change. And Sean Hoare played last night, and for me, he was the man at fault for the first two goals. He's caught in possession for the first one. I mean, he loses the ball out on the right wing. He wins it back, and within a couple of seconds, he gives it away again.
Yeah.
Now, look, it's a brilliant strike into the top corner, but Hoare should have had that ball long gone out of that situation. Second one, Hoare loses his man for the header. You feel Rogers maybe should have done better, but for me, Sean Hoare loses his man there. So they were two really poor individual errors. We've talked about the missed penalty and all the rest. So, but again, you're looking at some of the players that, or we're talking about the fact here that Dundalk will make a lot of changes and they might favour Athlone, but you have to think of the players that are going to come in. You'd expect Gartland to come into that team. That's got to shore them up. The likes of Leahy didn't play a huge amount of football last night. McElhenney was superb when he came off the bench. Well, he start and play maybe as close to 90 minutes. McMillan only played a half as well. So the options they've got to bring in there, they really should have too much quality for Athlone.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's going to be a tough night for Athlone. As I said, I think Dundalk will come through it comfortably enough. But Athlone still have to play their own game and try and put it up to Dundalk, regardless of who's on the pitch. They may get some solace in certain positions where players that you might expect to start in a, you know, maybe in the FA Cup final, for example, mightn't be starting when they're playing Athlone. But some of the players that are coming in and some of the players that are in and around the starting 11, you don't want to see them anytime. So it's going to be a very tough challenge for Athlone.
Yeah, and of course, the FAI Cup final is only a couple of weeks away now. And Dundalk will be heading away to Malta, and they'll be coming back, and the Cup final is 2 days later. Now, obviously, Dundalk can't get out of the group. I know there's great financial rewards still up for grabs. If they could get a point out in Norway, it's worth a lot of money to them. And if they could win, it's worth an awful lot more. But is there an argument to be made if they do get past that loan tomorrow, play the reserves against Malta, and focus on that Cup final? Because silverware is what fans want at the end of the day. Paychecks are great for the people running the club, but from a fan's point of view, it's the Cup wins you look back on.
It is the Cup wins you look back on, and it would be great to cap off the season with an FAI Cup win, even though you can't be there. I'm not really sure what way it's going to be for Dundalk playing out in Molde. There's an equal argument for both. I think for Filippo's critics, let's say, he's in trouble either way, no matter if he sends out everybody and they win the game, but they lose the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
He's going to lose. If they even draw the game out in Molde and win the FA Cup final, he'll probably still get abuse. If they win the Totem, he'll get abuse, I'm sure, for picking people and tactical changes and all the rest of it. So I think, you know, it'll probably be a decision within the club which one they need to concentrate on. I know for myself, while it's great, for European, well, I don't know about my club, but we haven't been to a European group stage, maybe someday. But I can imagine that, you know, Longford Town have won a couple of FAI Cups. So, you know, I'll never forget those. Now, a lot of that is because I was there. At the end of the day, an FAI Cup final win is something that you take part in as a supporter. So it's going to be hard to, from a fan perspective, to see would I want an FAI Cup win or would I rather the financial security of 3 points in Europe? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be coming up to Christmas. It'd be great from a Dundalk point of view if they had the cup, you know, and maybe they can do like Longford did, a bit of a drive through the town or something and have the cup waving out the window. You can't wave a paycheck out the window for picking up for something in Europe. I don't think it'd get the same turnout.
It wouldn't get the same turnout, but you know, it's a very precarious position for a lot of League of Ireland clubs, and the money is huge, particularly from this year. So would you rather an FAI Cup win and then, you know, be in trouble next June, or would you rather the financial security and not have
not the Dundalk are in need of picking up a win for financial security or anything,
but I
can certainly see what you're saying. The League of Ireland clubs can't turn down the opportunity of 175,000 for a draw or whatever it is. I think it's 500,000 for a win or 250,000. It's a lot of money anyway.
Yeah, it's nothing to be sniffed at. And, you know, considering some of the budgets in the League of Ireland, 250 go a long way to do a lot of paying. So I think it'll probably come down to, you know, a team management and a club management conversation to go, which one do we think we need to concentrate on?
Yeah, and maybe this game against Athlone might have a big play and a big say on that. If they're cruising a half time, they can take off a couple of players, rest them for Molde. Maybe they play one half, you know. So there's a lot of pieces still in motion there. But I think what we'll do now is we'll move on to our predictions and our charity bet, our weekly charity bet sponsored by bar1racing.com. They give us a €10 free bet to use on the show each and every week. We're trying to raise a few pounds for charity now as we come towards the end of the season. Gary, I'm going to go... I'll give you my predictions for the two games. I think Shamrock Rovers will win against Sligo in the 90 minutes, and I think Dundalk will be comfortable enough against Athlone as well. But my bet this week is going to be a €5 on Shamrock Rovers to win the cup. I think they're quite a good price. I think Dundalk are actually currently the favourites. That's probably because Dundalk have the easier route through to the final. But I think if the two teams, Rovers and Dundalk, are to meet in the final, there'll only be one favourite there, and it will be the league champion Shamrock Rovers. So I'm going to take a bit of value on Rovers there. From your own point of view, what are you going for this week?
I hadn't even thought of doing an outright bet, to be quite honest with you. I was going to go with Rovers to beat Sligo and then Dundalk -1 to beat Athlone.
I'm still not sure you'd even get a great price on that, but if you want to go ahead with that, sure, we'll hope and pray.
Absolutely, sure. Look, as you know, some crazy bets that I put in. I guess on the podcast, I'd like to get some bit of positivity into that pot. So, even if it's a few quid, what about it?
Yeah, exactly. Let's hope we can get something in the kitty. Yeah, look, we're gonna break for an interview now. We're gonna hear from one of Athlone's main men. As I said, he scored a brilliant hat-trick in the quarter-final win over Shelburne, and he'll be looking forward to the game on Sunday against Athlone. It's live on RT. Dean George will be on the pitch, and we're going to hear from him now on BTS. Now, a massive game coming up on Sunday for Athlone Town. They haven't been at this stage of the FAI Cup for many, many years, and they'll face Dundalk, a team who have been in many, many finals in recent years. So it's a big, big task for Athlone Town. I'm delighted to say Dean George joins me now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Of course, Dean got that fantastic hat-trick in the last round against Shells. Dean, how are you keeping?
Yeah, no, not too bad at all. Thanks, Ciarán. Thanks again for having me on. But yeah, no, I'm feeling good and looking forward to the game Sunday.
Yeah, we'll speak about this big challenge you have upcoming against Dundalk. And they've struggled slightly domestically this year, but they were absolutely brilliant against Bohemians in the last round. So it looks like it's going to be quite a game on Sunday. But just going back to the game against Shelburne, a hat-trick for yourself. It was your first goals of the season as well. Talk us through that game.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a whirlwind. I'm not going to lie. I think I'm still kind of pinching myself, even to this day. I think a hat-trick in senior football in general, it doesn't come that often, but to get it in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup against an opposition such as Shells, I think I was just delighted, and I think it's one of those now to look back on for the career as well.
Yeah, and look, I suppose the First Division, as you know, doesn't get as much coverage as it should. You're perhaps not a player that's overly well known in the league. Obviously, you're much better known now after that hat-trick against Shells. But just tell us a little bit about your own backstory. You were with Wexford's underage set-up for two or three seasons. Then you went to Athlone, and then this is actually your second spell with Athlone because you were away with Tálaga Rovers for a season as well. So just tell us, I suppose, about your recent career in League of Ireland football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so as you said, I started with Wexford Utes in the underage. I went kind of straight into the under-19s, and I played kind of, let's say, about two seasons under-19s, and then after my second season, I kind of started training with the first team, and it was Shane Keegan and that kind of set up that Premier side that they had. So it was a great experience, even getting involved training with some of those lads, some of the players I was playing with that I tried to rub off in my own game. And eventually, I made the debut against Sligo in the Premier, just kind of before the playoffs were facing Wexford, and it kind of kicked on from then. I got into the First Division side then, unfortunately, when we were relegated, and then later then with Wexford FC, obviously with the new club, I joined up, and I was a kind of strong part of that initial stages of Wexford FC. I kind of had a good breakout season, scoring three goals actually that year from out wide left wing. And then I kind of moved over then to Athlone off the back of that with Mitch and Terry and stuff. And, you know, that season was probably a frustrating one for me with Athlone. I didn't get as much game time as I would have liked. I mean, we had a good team, like we had strong players, but personally, I didn't think I was getting enough game time. And then as a result of that, I decided to go to Tálaga in the off-season in between. And I can't speak highly enough of Tálaga, of the club, the lads there, and the setup. It was excellent, really, and it gave me the game time and the confidence that I needed to kind of push on. And then when Athlone came back, then they said they were interested, and Adrian kind of gave me a call and said, look, we want to bring you into the setup and give you a chance again this year. I was eager, kind of prove to myself, I suppose, that I could get into an Athlone team and play regularly, and thankfully, this season I've done that, and you know, the hat trick and all, everything, scoring the goals is obviously what's going to bring me a bit of attention. But I think the main thing this year was game time and minutes under my belt, and I got that, especially towards the end. I kind of started to find my feet around the kind of last 10-12 games. I think the team in general, really, we started to kind of come together. I think we were a young squad, and even myself, I'm quite young, I'm only 22, and all the other players, we have some like just exceptional like talents in around the squad that are only 18, 19, 17, 20, you know. So it was a great experience, especially now to be looking forward to a semi-final as well. It'll be great. It'll stand to all the lads, really.
Yeah, and we had Adrian on the show here a couple of weeks ago, and we spoke to him about some of the young stars in that side. It is a very exciting team Athlone have after a couple of really difficult years. It's good to see there is a bit of vibrancy around Athlone at the moment. Just tell us a little bit about Adrian. He seems to be a bit of a man manager. Is he one of them managers to put the arm around a player and make them feel really confident in themselves?
I think credit to the lads, to Adrian and Decky. I think they know that there's it's a young squad, so it's hard to kind of it's hard kind of, as a manager, it's hard kind of, I suppose, kind of crack down on expectations when it's a young team and you're always developing. But I think they have a good line between kind of giving the player confidence, but also they're not afraid. Then if you're doing something you shouldn't be, or if you're making a mistake, you know, they will let you know, you know. But they are really good at kind of boosting your confidence and giving you that armour on the shoulder when needs be. But it's not to say that they don't crack down the whip when necessary as well.
Yeah, and again, going back to something you mentioned there, some of the young, really exciting players in that team. Obviously, the one I think most people probably know best is Ronan Manning. He's an incredible talent. And in the games I've watched at Lone this year, particularly the two games against Longford, I thought yourself and Ronan seemed to have a really good understanding there in the final third. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Just, yeah, 100%. I think me and Ronan, we've developed kind of a bit of a connection throughout just the game, especially towards the final part of the season. And I think it's, look, the goals and what he's done for the team on the regular, like in the season, as stands for himself. But he just, I can't really speak highly enough of Ronan. I think he's just he's an exceptional player, and I think you can see the kind of the low centre of gravity, the kind of the turns, the twists, and the movement that he has. And without Ronan, I think he keeps us ticking. Really, I think without Ronan, the connection, even myself in the Shells game, you know, without him going into those spaces and supplying the. Giving me the kind of the supply to go off that, I think we wouldn't be getting forward as much as we do. I think Ronan is integral really to what we do in Athlone.
Yeah, and obviously Athlone didn't make the playoffs in the first division, so your season's been over the best part of a month now. Tell us the process in terms of keeping ticking over for this cup semi final.
Yeah, it's been difficult. Like as you say, like the season's been over, and so it's. It's hard really to get friendlies and to arrange matches and to kind of get up for a game where you're not sure who you're playing. It's a bit of a slog, I think, 4 weeks. It's been, if not more. And, you know, we were supposed to obviously have the game earlier beforehand and it got postponed again. So, you know, it's been difficult, but it's been good. I mean, the lads, we're training, you know, three times a week and we're doing our own bit in the gym and stuff and keeping ticking over. But, yeah, it has been difficult, but it's good. Like so, it has been good. The training's been the tempo and the quality in training has been very good, and we're all just kind of excited now to get going and start the game really.
Yeah, and I suppose from a player's point of view, if someone had told you earlier on in the year you'd still be playing competitive football come November, you probably would have been absolutely delighted with that. In terms of next season, has discussions already started around the club in terms of planning for next year? Do you know your own situation?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I'm sure the lads have an idea of what they want to be doing for next year, but I think everything really the focus is on Sunday. So I don't think players wise anyway, we're very kind of goal orientated and we're focusing on Sunday, and after that then who knows what'll happen. But we'll worry about kind of next season after we're finished the season really, I suppose.
Yeah, and look, we're sitting down here chatting on a Thursday evening. Dundalk are about to play in a couple of hours in the Europa League against Rapid Vienna. I'm sure you'll be watching that. That can only build the excitement from a player's point of view to see those players on such a huge stage and know you've got them coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. I think we were doing, as a team, we were doing some, you know, video analysis before trainings some of the nights, and you're watching the players in like the Europa League badge and Europa League kits on and playing against the standard of opposition you could only dream of playing against, you know, that kind of way. So it was a bit of a reality check of the level you're coming up against. But no, it's all good. Like it's brilliant. That's what you want to be doing. You want to be testing yourself against this level of opposition, you know. And look, we'll be watching it, of course. I'd say all the lads will all be watching the game tonight, but I don't think we'll be taking too much out of it for our own game. I think the opposition, the level of opposition and how they'll play will be a lot different than how they face us. So it'll be more for enjoyment purposes, really, be watching it tonight.
Yeah, and look, finally, Dean, obviously the big disappointment here is it's a semi-final at home in Lizzie Woolen. Great facilities there, the new 4G pitch as well, and there'll be no supporters, unfortunately. And as I said earlier on in the interview, Athlone as a club have gone through some really difficult couple of years. There was maybe a bit of a disillusion amongst the support there. It would have been great if the people could have come out and got behind the town for such a massive game, such a big club coming down to the Midlands. I suppose you've just got to hope that they tune in their numbers. It's live on RT the game, of course, and hopefully you can get a result and maybe the momentum carries into next season then, because it'd be great to see Athlone getting that type of support that they used to have a couple of years ago back.
Oh yeah, exactly, you hit the nail on the head there. Look, the support without the supporters there, it will be weird. It won't be the same. I think that the buzz and the atmosphere and the build up is all there, but the idea of not having the fans, I think the stadium would have been packed out really to the rafters on Sunday if it was possible. But the support, even without that, the support from the fans and on social media and stuff, you can see it's all encouraging, and you can see the town is starting to, alone as a town, really starting to get behind the team, which is great. It's fantastic. And look, if we can build on that, and look, if we can give them a result Sunday, you know, who knows what will happen. But if we can build on that next year, and hopefully if the fans can come back for next year as well, it'll be excellent. Yeah, that's the plan, really.
Well, Dean, it's been absolutely brilliant speaking to you. As I said before the interview started, I'm quite tied in with Dundalk here, and obviously we can't have Athlone going overshadowing Longford's success by getting to a cup final. So I'm not sure I can wish you luck, but I hope you have a good. Yeah. I hope you have a good game.
Yeah, this is it. Look, yeah, no worries. Look, I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me on, and look, all the best next season, I suppose, from in the Premier. All the best of luck with that. I hope you just have a good season. And who knows what will happen.
Yeah, Dean, been brilliant speaking to you. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me on.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.
Yeah, as ever, a big thanks to our guests this week, Stephen Rice and Dean George, and they both took those interviews at very short notice as well, so that's greatly appreciated, lads. Thanks for speaking to us, and the very best of luck with your endeavours. Gary, before we go, it's still very early days. Obviously, the season is still running for some clubs, but for a lot of the clubs in the First Division and even some of the Premier clubs, their season's been over maybe the best part of a month now. We're starting to see some movement already within transfers. Brendan Clark gone from St. Pat's to Shells. Were you surprised by that one?
It probably suited him. You know, I'm not sure where he's working or what that side of his life is like, but Shells are in the First Division now, as we all know. So you know, there may be less training and other commitments like that around the club, so it probably just suited him better than Pat, so I wouldn't be overly surprised with it. I thought Jack Brady probably deserved a number one shout at Shells, but look, it wasn't to be. I think a lot of clubs around the league could do it, taking first or second look at Jack Brady. I know he's
100%
great performances.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the goalkeeping situation at Shells this year has been very strange. McCabe started Brady started the year as the number one. Then McCabe got a spell, and then Brady got it back. So I don't like to see that chopping and changing. I know there's the whole thing of managers having a league goalkeeper and a cup keeper. That's something that's become more prevalent in recent years. It's something that a lot of the Spanish clubs and the like and European clubs have done for years, but we're starting to see that in the UK and even in Ireland now. But obviously we didn't have as many cup games this year. There was no League Cup, there was no Leinster Senior Cup, so opportunities were less and less for number two goalkeepers as such. So in the league, really, there should have only been one man. Put your faith in and put him as the number one and stick with him, unless he's having, you know, some absolutely horrendous performances. But I don't think Jack Brady falls into that category for 1 minute. So if I was Brady, I'd be looking, why is Brendan Clark coming in here? You know, I'd be maybe contemplating my own future there.
Well, actually, Jack Brady has signed back up, so I'm not really sure, you know, what went on there. I would have thought that other League of Ireland clubs, particularly in the First Division, would be picking up an experienced and well regarded keeper there. But look, he signed up, maybe he could learn a thing or two from Clark. I'm not really sure.
I suppose the message to him will be, embrace this challenge, learn off him. You know, there's nothing to say, you can't get that number one shirt back, but at the same time,
you know, he's done a lot of learning in his time. Do you know what I mean? I think he deserves a number one shout.
Yeah, I'd agree there. We'll move on to another man. It looks like Dinny Corcoran perhaps not staying with Bohemians. Do you think he'll be a man in demand?
Yeah, he will be. I think he could do with keeping on a black and a red and black shirt for next season.
Would you be interested in a Longford Town kit?
I certainly would. I think he has great experience. He knows, played a long time in the league. I think he'd be great for, you know, a lot of the younger players. You know, Longford Town still have quite a young squad. So I think it'd be beneficial for some of the attacking players in Longford Town to help them
assimilate
into the league.
As good of a season Manly had this year and last year, particularly at Cabinteely, they were his first two seasons in the League of Ireland football. So you forget how inexperienced he is. And obviously he's going into Premier Division football. He's never played in the Premier. You could learn off worse than someone like Dinny Corcoran in training.
Oh, absolutely. Like, Dinny has been at it for such a long time, but he still has a lot to offer. So I think him playing for Longford next year will be a great experience to bring into the team.
We're talking about him here like he's put pen to paper already. We know nothing.
Oh no, I haven't a clue.
As Manuel and Fawley Towers would say, I know nothing.
I would like to see him. I think he does have something to offer Longford Town. So Dara, I know you listen every week. get him on the blower there. Work something out.
And funny enough, moving on to a former Longford Town man, in the last couple of moments, I just seen it flash up on my phone there, breaking news. Daniel O'Reilly's decided he's not going to be staying with Shelburne. So again, would you welcome him returning to Longford Town perhaps?
I probably would. I really liked him when he was with us for a few seasons.
Got in the first division team of the year, didn't he, when he was with Longford?
He did, yeah, and then went up to Harps. Mm. So, like, I would like to see him back. He's a solid player. You know, was he injured this season that he didn't play that much with?
Well, he was in the stand, wasn't he, for the playoff game, so I assume he was injured there. But seemed to be in and out, seemed to be on the bench quite a bit again.
He did.
A lot of chopping and changing the shells this year. I don't know. A strange one.
It is a strange one. And, like, look, I just, myself, I always think from a Longford perspective, particularly in this conversation, that, you know, or any promoted team, do you want to be shopping around players in the first division where you just left, or players that came down from the Premier? Yep. Yeah, there will be some gems there, of course. But
I suppose the difference here is you know the player, you know what he can do, what he can't do. And Longford, they're not stuck for centre halves at the moment. They've got Manley, McDonald, Joe Gorman. They've got Dylan Hand that can play centre half as well.
Yeah,
but I suppose with the fact that they do play three at the back, if one gets injured, you're immediately taken out one of the starting 11. Whereas obviously, if you play with your traditional 4-4-2 or whatever, you only have your two centre halves. If one gets injured, it's not that big of a deal. You've usually got one or two left on the bench. So I suppose if you did sign someone like O'Reilly, you've got that extra protection playing three at the back. That one of them did get injured, loss of form, suspension, etc., you can slot him in there quite easily, and he's quite good on the ball as well. He's got a good strike off the left foot as well. I've seen him score a couple of free kicks in his time and a couple of good goals. So he's definitely got a lot going for him.
Oh, he certainly does, and you know he's a hardy old man in the centre of defence. All right, so like I wouldn't mind having him come back. I know that that'll be his third stint at the club, won't it? If he comes back.
I actually totally forgot about his first stint. That's a funny one, actually, because he came in. Was Alan Matthews the manager at the time?
No, I thought Tony Cousins had him in.
Tony Cousins is right, yeah, had him in and played him out at left back, I think, at the time. And
a few games, and then he was.
Yeah, I know Daniel listens. I've actually spoken to Daniel about this as well. I remember when he played left back, he was quite young at the time. I think he came back from Fulham. Let's just say he didn't have a great time of things. And when he came back the second time, then I think it was under Alan maybe initially, and then under Neil, obviously, when Neil took over from Alan. Yeah, that lad. When they brought him back the second time, I remember everyone thinking, "What are we at bringing this fella back?" He was horrendous, and he was coming back from a low level of football in England as well. So you're like, "Ah, this lad's just been, you know, scratching around, chancing his arm in England." Came back and he was a different player. He slotted,
he played
centre half, and he was just absolutely unbelievable. A lot of Longford fans were very sorry to see him leave.
Definitely, so I was one of them.
And aside from all of that, he's a great lad off the pitch as well. So I think he'd be more than welcome back in a Longford dressing room. But look, as I said, it's still quite early days in terms of transfers and comings and goings. I'm sure I've forgotten plenty there, but we'll be chatting about them over the next few weeks as we start to wind down the podcast. Obviously, we've got the Cup semi-finals. That'll be followed by the Cup final. And we'll have our usual Christmas special as well and a few other bits and pieces. So as ever, the best advice is just to subscribe to the show and you won't miss a beat. And if you follow us on our social channels on Twitter and Facebook, you'll not miss anything either. But that's where we'll round it off for tonight. Gary, once again, thanks very much for joining me.
You're very welcome, Kieran. Thanks very much. And hopefully we'll have a nice couple of FAI Cup semi-finals to look back on next week.
Yeah, that's it, folks. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in and we'll speak to you again next week.